La Jolla, California, UC San Diego Athletics presents TritonCast, the podcast for the UC San Diego Tritons. Here are your hosts, Jeff Toriel and Jenny Stevens.
Welcome to episode 14 of TritonCast, the podcast for UC San Diego Athletics. Alongside Jenny Stevens, I'm Jeff Toriel. Whether you found us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, UC San Diego Athletics website, or another platform, we're so happy you've joined us. If you like what you hear today, and we know you will, do us a favor and subscribe, rate us, and write a brief review. It would mean a lot. And now that I've promised the listeners a quality show this week, what do we got, Jenny?
Well, Jeff, I can definitely promise we've got a great one in store today, too. In today's Triton Spotlight, we chat with women's basketball alum Leora Jester. She was the first Division II All-American in program history, and she became the team's all-time leading scorer in her junior year. Last year, she was inducted into the UC San Diego Athletics Hall of Fame and the CCAA Hall of Fame. But as you'll hear, there's so much more to Leora's story than just success on the basketball court. Our conversation with Leora comes your way in just a little bit in this week's Triton Spotlight.
But first, let's go around campus. A pair of scholar athletes appeared on a UCSD alumni panel to discuss the challenges they've faced during the pandemic. Read about Gabe Avillion and Delaney Wittich showcase on UCSDTritons.com. In addition, our Triton Tuesday Did You Know series has got some fascinating information about our favorite Oceanside campus. And lastly, coming up on October 1st, Josh Cohen and Maccabi Haifa FC will take on Tottenham Hotspur on the pitch. You can learn more about Josh's soccer journey by checking out episode 11 of TritonCast.
Coming up later in today's show, our women's basketball theme continues as we chat with current Triton Madison Baxter in our campus spotlight. But first, it's on to this week's Triton Spotlight. Here's our conversation with UC San Diego Hall of Famer Leora Jester.
Leora, let's start with UC San Diego. How'd you end up there?
I was kind of one of these kids that, like, I loved playing sports. I wasn't really driven by any other interests, like academic or whatnot. And UCSD was the main school that showed interest in me. And so in a very, like, path of least resistance kind of way, it was like, oh, they want me? Okay, I'll go there. And there wasn't, you know, as much as that, it's not like the coolest story. It was very much like my mom's like, oh, if you go to in-state, you know, school, I'll help out. And, you know, they really want you. And I had the option probably of playing club my senior year and maybe, you know, other things happen. But it was very much like, here's an easy path. I met the girls. I was like, wow, like they seem really cool to hang out with. I'm definitely not cool enough, so this would be really fun. Let's just do it.
Well, you obviously fit in well enough, and you had quite a bit of team success while you were there. What are some of your favorite memories from being part of that program over the years?
I think there were sort of almost two separate experiences we had. I had, you know, two different head coaches, my first 2 years and my last 2 years. And there was, I think sometimes when you're not as successful as a team winning, there's more, you know, you have to develop sort of like a resistance to that, that comes with more joking and, kind of like camaraderie in losing that. Like, really, there was just so many people with great personalities that always had me laughing. And I think just like the inside jokes that developed, they really like let me come from Venice and be this kind of like weird, quirky person and embrace that personality. And, you know, they let me be the person that did like the pregame dances in the locker room with the pants over my shoulder. And there were just a lot of inside jokes. So I think that was a big part. And then, you know, the last 2 years were there were so many memories of, I think, us coming together under a lot of pressure or, you know, kind of working hard for this thing bigger than us that, like, Coach Jones kind of created that atmosphere. And that kind of intensity still sits with me today in this way that it's just so gratifying, right? And so I think there was both of those kinds of memories.
So you were the in the locker room pregame teammate hype person. Were you practicing your routines or coordinating it, or was that all spur of the moment?
I think it became spur of the moment, and then it became a routine where certain song would come on and I'd have to like go into the bathroom area and prepare myself and then come out. And there's just something really weird looking about having pants over your shoulders and just your head coming out, and you can do certain things with your legs that just make it really weird looking. And that was just the thing we did. We drew like cartoons of the other team on the whiteboard, and that was definitely one of my more favorite times.
We'll get into your knack for artistry in a little bit. You mentioned a minute ago about Coach Janelle Jones coming over from Oklahoma City University, which was after your sophomore year, so leading into your junior year. And not that you didn't have good years competitively on a personal level the first 2 years, but man, that your junior year and senior year, you really took off athletically. What was it about her coaching style or her influence, whatever the case might be, that helped you really excel your last 2 years competitively?
You know, she is just, there's some people that just push, right? They have this fire and this pushing spirit and this competitive desire that it's contagious. And when I first met her, you know, like visually speaking, I was like, what? She's a basketball coach kind of thing. And when we were interviewing her, there was this moment where she was describing a time where she had to punish a team for something, and they had the 6 a.m. whatever conditioning, and she was making them do suicides, and the way that she expressed, like, I had to, you know, get them down to 50 suicides at 6 a.m. in the morning, and there was something about that, like, it instilled fear in me, to be honest, where I was like, oh, man, if she becomes our coach, I'm done, you know? But it was that kind of thing where, like, you bought in, and somehow like it made working hard and being pushed to your limits like this experience that, you know, sports can sometimes really be about, you know, like creates this kind of like you have to survive. And, you know, like someone like me growing up, I didn't have that in many ways from privilege. Right. So it's like, it brings these, she like somehow can pull these parts out of people, and she did that for me.
You mentioned something very interesting there, that when UC San Diego was looking to hire a new coach that spring summer, that your team, you all were a part of the interviews. Did you meet as a group to discuss candidates, or what was that process like?
I think what happened is, there was like the first, set of finalists, and we, you know, we got to have some time. We obviously didn't have the ultimate say, but we got to meet with each one of them and give our feedback. And the first round, it resulted in a choice that I think a lot of us were not happy about. And, it didn't work out for some other reasons where, you know, this gentleman was hired and then we came to find out that he wasn't in a position to be able to be hireable. And so I think maybe when the second round came about, our words maybe had a little more influence, but we at least got to get a feel for each one of the candidates.
What a fascinating process. We talked about your final 2 years, in particular, in some of the accolades that you were able to earn, including Conference Player of the Year. You became the program's first Division II All-American. I thought one of the amazing things that I read in preparing for this interview was you became the school's all-time leading scorer, but only you were only a junior at that time, so you still had another year to add to it. And even maybe more interesting to me than that was that it wasn't just that you were a scorer, you were third all-time in the program in both assists and steals. So how did you, you know, in the midst of the flow of the game, find that balance of needing to score versus also keeping your teammates involved and getting them the ball?
You know, I think it's kind of interesting because I don't necessarily have the traditional makeup of someone who kind of leads in scoring and stuff like that, because I'm honestly, especially during that time, like if a teammate thought I was a ball hog or something, I would probably cry, you know? And so there was this like kind of tension probably internally where, you know, the coach was like, put the ball in her hands, like shoot the ball, right? And I'm like, if I shoot the ball and like my teammate's like, ugh, that was, you know, a bad shot, and I sensed any kind of, you know, tension towards me, I don't think I could handle that. And so I was like, if I have to shoot the most, I have to be the most efficient in making them. And I also need to make sure that, you know, people feel like as close as I can get to, you know, for them to feel like I'm not, you know, taking over and not letting them be a part of this game, right?
As a senior, your team reached the national semifinals. What was that run like, and what was, you know, how tough was that obviously when it came to an end just a little bit short?
I think the real toughness with something coming short was the year before, where we had our marker year, and the perception of UCSD women's basketball had such a drastic shift from, you know, like we're going and you know, upsetting teams to teams wanting to upset us, and making it to the playoffs and losing in the first round. And that was such a momentum killer, and absorbing that shortcoming, I think, was just so hard on us that by the time we got to that place again the next year, it was like we almost weren't thinking, and we've kind of entered some space where it was all, you know, like we were almost this machine. And I think making it to the Elite Eight, you know, by that time we had pushed through barriers that we hadn't before. Like we somehow got through, you know, Seattle Pacific, I think because they had lost, but just the fact that we had gotten there, you know, was breaking new barriers for us. And I think that final loss, it was sort of like, you know, our point guard tore her ACL, and we were, I think the machine was kind of needing to refuel, but we didn't quite have that, you know, place to refuel and get healthy again and stuff like that.
There was a specific game your senior year against Western Washington, part of a holiday tournament just before Christmas. You had 34 points and 10 assists against Western Washington. Do you remember that game?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think there were some games by that time. Again, I think Coach Jones was the catalyst for pulling parts of me where and the team, where we kind of could enter a place where you kind of lose yourself. And I remember Western Washington kind of being one of those games where, you know, I felt like I lost myself in the game, and, you know, like ball goes in the basket and, you know, the different plays happen. Everything kind of happens, like people step up at these certain moments, and it all kind of comes together. Where, you know, the end result, of course, is at least the team playing at their best. And, you know, that year, that usually meant a win.
Lior Juster, our guest on TritonCast. At the start, you said you chose UC San Diego because of many reasons, but you didn't mention academics as one of them. But you were a double major, math, secondary education. You were an academic All-America your senior year. So clearly you did very well in the classroom. How did you balance that?
I was more someone that probably just, I can kind of consistently worked hard. I found pretty much pretty soon in my collegiate time, like a sense of balance, like how many classes I could take, trying to balance, like, okay, I know this one class might be really hard, so I'm going to try to buffer that. And I took advantage of a TA office hour, especially with math, where probably spent a lot less time struggling with a problem I couldn't figure out, and, you know, getting help. But I think for the most part, I kind of wasn't much of a social person or party or those kinds of things. So I just kind of like chipped away at it enough where I did well enough for myself.
As you were approaching the end of your time in La Jolla at UC San Diego, what were your career goals? What were you planning to do after graduating?
I think, you know, as my basketball career was winding down, I really had to start introspecting because so much of my identity was tied to myself as an athlete, even through high school. And I wasn't really attached to specific academic interests or life interests. And so I just kind of held on to this idea that I really enjoyed my high school math teachers' atmospheres, their environments. And for whatever reason, I was like, well, maybe I could be a math teacher too. And kind of, again, the similar way where I ended up at UCSD is just like, well, this seems like the path of least resistance, you know. I ended up studying math. I'm in basketball, like teaching, coaching, math. Seems like a path I could just keep kind of rolling down.
I know since graduating, you earned a couple of master's degrees, one from Mercer, one from Cal State LA. And you did coach basketball there as well. What was that experience like?
I think I like to call it PTS athlete syndrome, where for me, I could not find the same attachment to the team experience as a coach. Which now in hindsight recognize that I'm very much someone who needs to be an active participant, and it wasn't active enough for me to be on the sideline clapping, or, you know, strategic kind of structuring and these kinds of things. And so for me, I really, really had a hard time coaching and feeling connected to the experience.
And so was there a moment or a point where you came to that realization and decided, you know, this is not the path for me, and kind of what was next at that point?
Yeah, I think, there were probably lots of moments that year where it was becoming clear. Like, I remember it was just, I felt so tired standing up and clapping during practice that I had to ask Coach Jones, like, I know you want me to like get the energy up during practice, but you mind if I lay down over here or like sit down? And being so bored that I asked Coach, like, hey, I just want to like go try to work at Chick-fil-A. Like, I don't know, I never worked there. You mind? You know, just like weird things where I obviously wasn't wasn't interested in coaching. And so I think there were a lot of signs, a lot of moments where I was like, I don't think I can do another year of this.
So then you ultimately became a software engineer, and clearly that seems to suit you well. You've been in that industry for quite a while. Are there comparisons to basketball in terms of work ethic and that kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's certainly a persistence in problem solving when you want to pull your hair out and kind of having to sit in discomfort, which in this case, again, is problem solving. But the other major comparisons and where it deviates from both teaching and coaching, of which I was not, didn't suit me, was that you are really an active participant in creating this code and molding it. And it's a craft of many kinds. So you're practicing your skills, you're honing your skills, you're learning new moves. And it's like never stops, right? Like basketball, it's just like, all right, well, you can go through your legs, cross, and then there's a counter to that move and a counter to that move. But with technology, it's really endless. And I fell in love with it in the same way. I didn't realize that I had loved basketball for that.
And how have you advanced your career in terms of being a software engineer? I know you've worked at a couple of places, but how have you progressed and kind of honed that craft?
Well, I would say it's a little bit analogous to, like, I probably made the transition blindly, kind of like, oh, I want to, like someone who maybe has never played any sports before, and they go and they try to figure out which sport, you know, they're best at and which one they like the most. And so at first I kind of fell into JPL, and I was doing more very, very much like data predictive models, like machine learning kind of domain. And then I kind of shifted into software development and web development. And it was like, oh man, like this, I like this more. And then once I was in that world, like you just, you know, you I've worked in different domains, right? Where it's like Resort Pass was the hospitality industry and a booking system, you're booking things. And I've worked for like a social advertising agency. So you learn the world of advertising. And so underneath that, you start kind of pulling out these universalities that applied no matter what domain you're working in, you know, these universalities about building software and web development in the same way, you know, I think as I've developed as a basketball player, you start to get this sense of these universalities of like, there's a certain idea of spacing and ball movement and, you know, these things that will apply no matter the situation. And so I think in that evolution, you know, I'm coming to that place now as a software engineer.
The company you work for now, Hop Skip Drive in LA, you've been there for over a year now. Tell us about your role and what the company does.
Yeah, so here I'm a full stack engineer, and so I work on the back end, and I also develop front end, which, you know, if you're not in the tech world, it kind of means I work on the stuff where someone clicking on a computer or cell phone, they're interacting with that screen. That's front end, and the back end is more about, you know, the data and what's delivered, what information is delivered to that screen. And Hop Skip Drive is basically a rideshare for kids, so similar to Uber or Lyft, but it's becoming more of like a school youth transportation solution where, you know, like we have contracts with the foster care system and other school systems to kind of ensure that kids, underserved groups, can still maybe, you know, they change foster homes, but they are still able to commute to the same school to stay. So those kinds of consistencies, and obviously not the best business to be in during COVID.
Yeah, for sure. I was going to ask you, how has the pandemic changed your own work as well as the company, and how you guys are trying to survive this time like we all are?
Yeah. Well, it unfortunately hit our business, I think, at a disproportionate space, because, you know, it's this business, Hopscape Drive, they're in many ways recession proof because kids still have to go to school, but there's just no COVID proof, and it's just been heartbreaking because so many people have had to be let go, valued teammates, you know. And sort of like in this way, we kind of have to hibernate to make it through, but it's such a viable business and like symbiotic kind of idea that, you know, we're just finding a way to make it through. And I think I believe that, you know, there's so much room for growth once kids start going back to school and their activities.
Yeah, it's such a noble cause. I mean, certainly hoping that we can get through this sooner than later, and your business and your industry will be back on its feet soon like the rest of us.
Right.
You grew up in the LA area, right?
Yeah.
So Venice. And what sports did you play as a child, or when did you start playing basketball?
I think my earliest basketball team picture was, I think, maybe when I was six. But my dad tells me, I didn't know this story, I heard it from him maybe a year ago, but there was some situation where like kids were hitting some golf putts or something like that, and really having trouble connecting with the ball. And I was probably younger than them, and I'm, you know, go and like pick up the putter thing, and I'd like smack the golf ball, you know, really far. So I think I started just getting involved with playing sports and being outside at a very early age, and had some affinity to it. So I was playing different sports year round, whether it be baseball, soccer, basketball, and definitely a lot of skateboarding, stuff like that.
Is that something you still do, the skateboarding?
No, that was weirdly an injury-prone sport, because I think like all of these kind of skill craft sports, like you start ollieing down one stair, and then the next thing to do is ollie down two. And what are you going to do after that? Maybe try three. And so it's just your like path to making an orthopedic surgeon's life much more full. So I've kind of avoided getting back on them, because I feel like I could think I was that age and try things I really shouldn't.
Do you still play basketball at all?
Yeah, I mean, whenever I can find a hoop that's not barricaded. I definitely have a ball in my car. And I went to my mom's for a while, and there was this basketball hoop across the street where cars were always parked. So I of course made a barter or something, like, hey, you guys aren't using that, mind if I move it over here? And like still found ways to kind of keep those neurons activated, so to speak.
And I know you like to paint. Tell us a little bit about where that love comes from, and kind of some of the works you're proud of, and how you use that to be a creative outlet for you.
Right. So I think ultimately it's just another creative outlet. And I just one of those like random, I guess, knacks or talents. But I found so much gratification in being able to give people paintings where they appreciate, you know, having a representation of something that they loved, or, you know, a building that means a lot to them, and being able to kind of share in that way with people has been really nice. The act of painting is very much creative, I think, I think taps into that same focus that, like, I remember the basketball shooting routines, that rhythm flow. I think it helps me tap into that place in the same way coding does. And so it's just really nice to have all these different ways to tap into that space and also have something to show for it. And I think the thing I really appreciate about painting is, like, coding, yeah, you can tap into that flow. But the thing is, when you're done, people are going to use that. And if it breaks, like, it's scary, right? Like, that code's out in production and 20 seconds, like, you find out that something you wrote has a bug in it. And, like, parents aren't getting text messages or drivers aren't, right? It's just, like, very anxiety provoking. But, you know, when you're done with the painting, it doesn't have to be so thorough that, like, you know, you have to worry that it's going to break. So I like that part about it.
How often do you paint?
I go through phases, but I'd say, you know, here or there, depending on the week, I'll sit down for a session a couple of days a week, finish a couple paintings here and there, but it depends on, like, people who need gifts, or especially if a beloved pet passes away, then it's like my known duty to paint the pet.
So you're painting primarily for others. Is that accurate?
Yeah.
It's very kind.
I think once in a while I'll get inspired. I've had, like, a few phases where I'll paint certain computer science paintings that kind of represent some of the algorithms that I find fascinating. But, you know, they're so mathy that you wish you could relate to. Like, most people don't want to hear, you know, a bunch of technical words, but if you show them a painting and kind of show them this representation of an algorithm, you can kind of hold their interest a little bit more when you're trying to explain something more complicated.
That's fascinating. So you're saying taking something like math that some people struggle with, certainly I'm raising my hand really high right now, but making it a visual thing that might be able to show those algorithms and tell the story that way?
Yeah. I've always been more of a visual person. Even when I was a math teacher, like, I probably used words a lot less than I should, and I would definitely try to draw representations of the concepts. But yeah, that's the idea.
Wow, that's really interesting. I read in your bio from when you were a student, so I'm going to hold you to this, you know, all these years later, somewhere along the line that you said that you get bored at movies. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think I have bad ADD, man. I think it's bad. I've been told it's bad. My partner tells me pretty bad. She might ask me to do something and I will, like, 5 seconds later have completely moved on to some other thing in my brain. It's bad. So that's why it's like I either, like, hyper focus and get into the flow, or I'm a lost cause. Like, I won't be able to remember the sentence I just read. I won't know what TV show I'm watching. I still know where I am, luckily, but it's pretty bad.
Yikes. So going back to movies, you don't even try now?
Let me see. Can I remember the last movie I watched? I did get addicted to Breaking Bad, I will say. But I'm getting bored this last season. It's kind of boring. I don't remember the last movie I've watched.
So if I asked you what your favorite movie was, what would you say?
My default answer is just Dumb and Dumber, because I've just, that was my answer since I was like 12. Is it my favorite movie? I don't know. But it's just easy to give that answer to people.
Leora Juster is our guest on TritonCast this week. Going back nearly a year ago now, you were inducted into the UCS San Diego Athletics Hall of Fame. What did that honor mean to you?
In person. Can you believe it?
I know. What a concept, right?
So that was, it was special. I think, you know, it's like rarely in life does a decade pass after an experience and like people bring attention to it where you reflect. And, you know, the fact that I had to write a speech, right, deepened that reflection, and it helped, I think, tie so much of how much that time, you know, 03 to 07 molded my modus operandi for how I am today and who I am. And I think, you know, being able to sit in that with people that, you know, were with me during that time, and also people that, you know, were more newer to my life and share that, it really helped me realize, like, you know, sometimes I really don't like the attention being on me, and that's why it's kind of an anomaly in many ways of like my becoming sort of like a, you know, leading scorer kind of person. But I think I really realized how much people love sharing that with someone they love. Like, they get out of it almost as much or more as I do. And that, I think, really changed maybe how I feel towards celebration in general, and traditions and things like that.
Couple months after that, it was really one of the last things before COVID kind of shut things down. You were then named to the CCAA Hall of Fame. So back on campus at RE/MAC Arena for that honor, being honored by the conference. That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was just like, man, this is some kind of gift that keeps on giving. Like, this is a lot of external validation, man. And now I'm getting used to that. So now, like, you know, I still go and probably find ways for being recognized. No, I'm kidding. But it was, it really felt like, I'm like, what are all these hallways, you know? Like, where are they? And yeah, can I trade this trophy in for a new basketball? Like, I don't have any basketballs. But the trophy was actually really nice and heavy, and I've been using it as a weightlifting kind of thing during the COVID time.
That's fantastic. Do you still keep in touch with teammates?
Yeah. You know, the social media connection helps. And I think here and there we check in with each other, and you know, there's a lot of police and fire department proximal teammates that were in the San Diego area that, you know, like when certain, like the fires come up, you know, I'm always kind of thinking about them. And there's others where, you know, we talk here and there, and, you know, there's that tie that binds us all. UCSD women's basketball, you know.
So this is maybe one of those questions that's impossible to answer, but do you think it would have been harder to play, you know, nowadays in the era of having social media as opposed to when you played and that wasn't a thing?
I'm sure. I think life is probably harder with social media. Well, depending on how much attention someone gives it, probably is just kind of distracting, and, you know, plays with self-esteem. But, you know, I don't know how much UCSD, I mean, I'm sure like on much larger scales, it's it takes away from the focus. But I wonder, you know, the girls I know and the athletes at UCSD are, I feel like, very smart and enlightened, and you know, there's ways to channel it to kind of, you know, probably help focus, but it's definitely a fine line, I think. It's kind of an answer that doesn't really answer the question.
Well, it was an unfair question. I'll be the first one to admit that. Final moments with Lior Juster on TritonCast. If you had one more season of eligibility, what would you want to accomplish?
Man, I would just love another year of those basketball routines where, like, life is working out and everything else comes after. I mean, my life is pretty much like that still. But, you know, I think it's just like a space where people coming together every day and sweating with them and going through stuff. You know, I wouldn't do it any different probably than the ways that I did, except maybe more, just more checking in with everyone and spending that time to connect and deepen, you know, relationships, because you're just there in person with these people every day. And it's something, especially during COVID times, that I think I'm especially grateful for. And, you know, you don't know what you have till it's gone, and it's sure is gone these days.
Yeah, that is true. How did you personally get ready, like get yourself hyped for the game? Was there certain music you listened to, certain food you had to eat?
There was no hype really. It was just like, please just let this game start so that my irritable bowel syndrome can, like, calm down and I can just play. and that's the truth. But yeah, the routines, we always had, like, the shooting routines, the songs, and all of that really was tiring, but I think it just helps kind of, you know, that familiarity helps get into the flow. But really, I was just like, can it just start, please?
No smartphones when you played. How did you pass the time on the long bus trips?
Man, there must have been a flip phone I was flipping. Flip the phone. Flip. How does the time go by? You'd have to ask.
I know you weren't watching movies.
Right, my ADD self. I wonder what I was doing. I was probably no different than today, where I'm just like practical joking people. Probably like leaving things in their backpacks, or I remember pretending I was trying to collect money in an airport. Like, I don't know what. I would just like kind of do kind of improv games with myself. People usually would join in, but there was definitely, oh yeah, I'd always, on airplanes, I'd always tell the flight attendants it was Coach Jones's birthday. Always a much older age than she was, like a 5-0.
And would they make a PA announcement?
Yep. Or wow. Like that, her and Todd Eilert, the assistant coach, were engaged.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Actually, now that I think of that, I'm surprised I didn't get in trouble. Somehow I don't get in trouble.
Your secret is safe with us. You mentioned improv, and you talked about your kind of pregame pants on shoulder routine, and you gave us your Coach Jones impression in passing earlier on. Is kind of acting? Is that in your forte?
You know, I did happen to end up on a SMILF episode as like a basketball dancer in Dream, but no, I haven't, like, you know, tried Hollywood, but I definitely find an outlet for it wherever I am. Like Hop, Skip, Drive, I'm in chart. I created a Slack channel called Lunch Walks, and I've built it up into this, like, people leaving fake Yelp reviews about the lunch walks, and like Lunchwalks contests, and I do a shout out about Lunchwalks every company meeting. And I make up like a pedometer steps and like highlights from the week of Lunchwalks, even if nobody walked. But yeah, I'd say I find outlets like that.
Hey, entertain yourself, and whether it entertains the others or not, who cares, right?
Darn dang, yeah.
Lior Juster, thanks so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Wow, what a great conversation with Leora. She had me cracking up when she was talking about that pants dance. I'd heard of that just from working with the women's basketball team, but it was cool to hear her perspective on it and how those fun memories have stuck with her all these years.
Well, and you wonder if, you know, maybe she could have a side gig at the improv too with the coach impression she had going on. Leora definitely had us cracking up for sure.
Yeah, she was hilarious, and we wish her the best with all that she does, whether it's improv or whatever it may be. Last month, UC San Diego's Triton Athletes Council launched the Triton Voting Initiative, an ambitious effort to get every Triton scholar athlete and coach registered to vote. In this week's Campus Spotlight, we're joined by women's basketball junior Madison Baxter to tell us why TAC has made this effort such a high priority and just how they're going about meeting the challenge. Jeff?
Madison, tell us about the Triton Voting Initiative and why TAC decided to take that on this year.
Yeah, so basically every year, TAC decides on what issues we want to tackle, things that we want to accomplish during the year. And so for this fall quarter, we really wanted to go with voting, especially with the election coming up. And we know how important voting is and how important it is for our students and our student athletes to be civically engaged. So we decided to come out with this voting initiative to, first off, make sure that all of our student athletes are registered to vote. Second of all, give them the opportunities to be informed, to know where to vote, how to vote. And then the third step, obviously, will be to get everybody to vote. But just with the upcoming election, we think that it's really important for all of our student athletes to vote. And we hope that this will last longer than just this election. We hope that it'll last for further elections, school elections, things like that.
As an executive board, how do you, as a group, decide what are the important issues or what you're going to focus on in a given year? How's that process come about?
So we all meet at the beginning of the school year. So we had our meeting like a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and we just talk about things that we want to get done. And one of the things that we wanted to think about was thinking both how we can make a difference locally and how we can make a difference like on a bigger picture. So voting is something that impacts us at both a local level and a national level, whether it's voting for, you know, your local election, school elections, or for the presidential election. So we thought that this was a really good initiative to cover both of those topics.
And you mentioned a moment ago, campus involvement as well. So clearly TAC is focused first and foremost on scholar athletes, but broadly speaking, how do you kind of incorporate that into campus involvement and civic engagement across campus?
Yeah, I mean, so the goal through TAC, our goal is to get all of the student athletes registered to vote and, you know, help them get informed. But overall, the initiative goes beyond just TAC. It goes towards the whole campus and all of our students. And the goal beyond just our athletics department is to get all of the students on campus registered to vote and create that culture of civic engagement at UCSD itself. And one of the things that we've been talking about is, like I said, you know, not just focusing on the big presidential elections, but on things that are more local, including student elections. You know, we have AS elections that a lot of students don't even know about. So just getting students more involved and more informed of what's going on.
Is civic engagement something that had a personal meaning to you before you as a TAC group came up with this initiative specifically?
Yeah, it has. You know, I took a AP government in high school, and that's one of the classes that kind of gets to start thinking about those things. And I know how important it is to be able to use your voice, and to be able to use your voice to make a difference too is huge, especially as a young adult. You definitely want to be informed of what's going on and have a say in the policies that are put into place, the officials that are elected. So definitely being civically engaged is super important, and it's something that's a life skill that'll carry out for the rest of your life.
And obviously you've been involved with TAC and as a member of the executive board. This year you're the Scholar Athlete Development Chair. What does that role entail?
Oh, I love this role. So this role is a great bridge between the athletics department and students being scholars as well. So within the Scholar Athlete Development, I'm working on helping students, you know, discover and enhance their academics outside of athletics. So if that's coordinating tutoring for our students, coordinating study spaces during finals, although I don't know how much coordination of study spaces we can do this year, but we can definitely do some online tutoring. We'll host resume workshops and help students get focused on a career and a life after being a scholar athlete. Because, you know, when you're a scholar athlete, your focus a lot of the times is primarily your sport. And a lot of students kind of need help with the academic side and just needing help focusing on that and focusing on what things they can pursue after. So that's kind of what I'm looking into, is how can we help enhance the academics, give athletes support in that area, and help prepare them for the future.
That service-oriented mindset is really cool. Is that something that, does that have to do with your upbringing? Is that something you've been involved with for a while, even maybe before UC San Diego?
As in, are you talking about being involved in academics or just involved in giving back?
Giving back, helping others.
Yeah, I think giving back and volunteering is super important. I'm very grateful for everything that I have and how I've gotten to where I am and everyone who's helped me there. So if I can give back to other people, I think that's super important. And that's also a big focus of TAC. We do a lot of community service and giving back to our community because we are very grateful for the position that we're in. And we have another student who's the community service chair. That's like one of our big projects. And we'll also focus on some big community projects this year as well, which is always one of the highlights of being on TAC.
How did you kind of ascend to a leadership position within TAC? Where did that come from?
Yeah, so my freshman year, obviously I wasn't involved, but we had two TAC reps, as every sport does. And I thought it was really neat that they could go to these meetings and meet other athletes, be involved in things that were going on outside of just our sport. They were kind of the liaison between some of the higher heads in the athletic department and other sports and our team. So I thought that was really neat. And that was something that I really wanted to be a part of. So then my sophomore year, I applied to be a TAC rep, not a part of eBoard, but just be a member of TAC. And that was last year, and I really enjoyed it. And then this year I wanted to get involved even more. So seeing what the Scholar Athlete Development Chair did last year, I really wanted to follow up on that and be a part of it. And, you know, I'm super, super passionate about both basketball and my academics. And I thought it was the perfect fit to help get other students that same support and hopefully that same enthusiasm for both as I do.
You know, we talk with scholar athletes time and again, and it's almost a cliche question I ask, but I'll ask it anyway. You know, being so involved athletically and of course being in a rigorous academic institution like UC San Diego, that's a big time commitment. And now you're adding these TAC eBoard responsibilities on top of that. How do you balance all of that?
You know, it is difficult being a scholar athlete. We have a lot of time commitments, but the key is if you love everything that you're doing, it doesn't feel like a chore. You know, I love going to basketball every day. I love learning. I love the classes I'm studying. And then I love being a part of TAC as well. So while it is busy and it is hard to balance, if you're enjoying everything that you're doing, it makes it a lot easier to manage.
Certainly understand that aspect. How has your role changed, or maybe TAC's, the way you guys operate as a unit, how has that changed while everybody's been remote or spread out?
You definitely miss the in-person interaction. You know, all of our meetings have been in person. We'll meet once every 2 weeks. We'll all get together. We'll have dinner. We'll go over the things that are upcoming, like certain events or certain projects we're working on. We'll get to talk about all of that in person. So we definitely do miss that, doing everything virtually. But since COVID started and since things have been remote, we've been able to do Zoom meetings, and we've been able to, you know, outreach to each other through social media and through things like that. So we're hoping to continue Zoom meetings and to continue doing things virtually until we can safely be back in person. Because, you know, it's not the same as being in person, but we're hoping to get there eventually.
And lastly, going back to the voting initiative specifically as an e-board, and maybe you personally, what will you consider success when it's all over?
I think that the short-term goal is to get all of our student athletes registered to vote. We're going team by team, challenging every team to record and make sure that everyone's registered and, you know, posting on social media when your team gets that goal. And then outwards of that, to get every student on campus registered as well. And then even later to get everyone to vote. You know, we can't make people vote, but if we can educate people on the importance of voting and the importance of being civically engaged, that's the best that we can do. So getting everyone registered is like the biggest short-term goal. And then long-term, it's, you know, it's more important than just this upcoming presidential election. It's important to maintain this culture going forward. So we're hoping to not only get students to participate in this upcoming election, but to create a culture of civic engagement among our scholar athletes, among our students, and on our campus going forward.
Well, certainly a very big undertaking, but one that is a very much a worthy cause. Madison, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
What an impressive undertaking by TAC, and so great to see them focusing on such a timely issue. If you want to see which teams are all in, head over to ucsdtritons.com/vote. And for more information on ensuring that you're ready to vote, you can visit vote.gov.
Coming up on episode 15 of TritonCast, we meet Taylor Ian Tosca, a senior on the women's rowing team. How does the engineering physics major balance that demanding academic pursuit with her time on the water? And what is she doing spending so much time in the water? Come back and join us next week to find out. New episodes of TritonCast premiere each Wednesday.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's show. For more on TritonCast, give us a follow on Twitter @TritonCast. And if you've got suggestions for a future guest, feel free to send us a tweet or email Jeff and me at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. See you back here next week.
You've been listening to TritonCast. TritonCast is a production of UC San Diego Athletics Communications. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your platform of choice. If you have show questions or comments or suggestions for future guests, email us at TritonCast@UCSD.edu. You can also follow the show on Twitter @TritonCast.